Thank you for choosing Dwelling Place City Church Podcast.
My daughter Cheyenne, she may or may not be competitive. She really likes the game of Uno. And you know, if you know the game of Uno, it's an old game, and you go around and you have a pile that's face down. You can't see my pile, but we'll pretend. You have a pile that's face down. You're not cheating, are you? And as you go, you want to keep adding a card, and it goes around the circle, and they go by color, and then I put a 5, and I add another 5. And the object of the game, if you don't know, is that you want to be the last one with the card. And what do you yell when you have the last one with the card? Uno. Cheyenne hates it when I yell Uno. Uno! And she's like, no, you cheated! No, she's got cards. She's sliding under the... No, don't tell. She's not in here, is she? No, she's got cards. She slides them under the mat, sticks them under a button. No, she cheats. But if you don't know, how many have ever been left with a hand of cards like this? And you hear what? Oh, you hear Uno. Oh my gosh. But the best thing when you hear Uno is when you have a +4. Because you can change the color, you can change the number, you can add to their hand, and then the whole game changes. Everything completely changes because they no longer have Uno. They now have more cards in their hand. And they could have more than 4 because they got to keep drawing until they get the color that you tell them. And then they could end up with this hand, and you end up with this hand, and then you get to win, and it's over. Oh, I love that part of the game. She may not get that competitive thing from me, but... How many of you ever felt like you're in a card game like this and the cards are stacked against you and you've got health problems, finance, oh, they're sliding down, finance problems, and you've got marital problems, kid problems, parent problems. Hey, Mom. Just an example. And the list goes on and you keep going and you keep going and your cards are stacking up in your hand and it gets worse and worse and you feel like Uno's going to happen at any moment and you don't see a wild card in your hand. None of those are there. You just have a big stack of ugly colors and stop and +2 and reverse, but nothing ever seems to fit and it seems like it gets worse and worse and you pick up another health and another car problem and another this and another that. And it just keeps going until that one day that God yells, Uno. And everything changes in your favor. You ever been in one of those moments where everything changes in your favor? Isn't that nice? We always wait for God, don't you know about this and this one and this one? And God, where's your wild card any day now? God, my cards are getting bigger. I can't hold anymore. And Cheyenne gets really mad when she's got so many cards in her hand. Her little hands can't fit. I got big hands. I can fit a lot of them. But she's got all these little cards, and she can't hold on to them. And so then she starts to cheat and put them all away. Don't tell us. But how many know when we get in this situation, the only thing we can do is just keep putting things in our hand and going, God, any moment, God, I know you have a wild card out there for me. At any moment, I know you're going to call Uno and you're going to lay it down. And everything that was stacked against me is going to change. And the enemy is going to go, wait, wait, wait. No, I was winning. What happened? And you're going to go, ha, God yelled Uno. You know, one of my favorite phrases in the Bible, if you've been here at our church long enough, is, but God. I like big buts. Some of you didn't want to say it because you're in church. It's okay. It's only got one T. I like big buts. I like when God says, but God. You ever heard a story and it keeps going and going and they're like, oh man, and then this happened and oh wow, and then this happened and then I got a phone call and this happened and then I opened the mail and but then, and you hear that but, and you know something is about to change in the story that negates everything they just told you. Everything they just set up, and they put you on this roller coaster, and then they say, but, and it all changes. I love that phrase, but God. You know, Joseph, if you know in the Bible, he was sold by his brothers into slavery. And the story goes that he's in prison. I mean, you could read it. He's in there for years. He becomes high rank. You know, his dad doesn't know he's dead. His brothers don't know what happened to him. They know he wasn't dead. Who knows what happened to him now? But it says in a verse that Joshua says, you know, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. You know, I know a lot of times in my own life I've had situations where I think, I don't know how this could ever look any better. I don't know how this can be turned for the good. I don't understand this. This doesn't make sense. You ever had these conversations, or is it just me? You all look really blank. Oh, I have honest conversations. I'm like, God, hello. I think I was in line before they were. Shouldn't you pull my ticket first? Oh, I got a ticket. Shouldn't you pull my blue ticket first? It doesn't happen that way. And I remind God, God, you know, you said, your word says, and I wait for the but, God. And how many know most of our circumstances, they can look one way, and it's only until you get through it and look back that you go, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, a couple years ago, I'm married, and I've got two little girls, and about maybe 2-3 years ago now at the most, it was the middle of the night. I think I've only told this story here once. It was the middle of the night, and we have a small house, but our bedroom is in the back, and all of our rooms have fans going, and we turn the fans on at night and get the noise, and, you know, it's dark. And my husband gets up about 1, and he comes in, and he goes, oh, I think something's wrong. Something's wrong with one of the girls. I go, oh, okay. So we get up. We're looking around. They're sound asleep. We go out in the living room, and it's lit up with light. And we're like, what is going on? And then we hear this, one of us is in the wrong circle. Come out with your hands up. And I was like, what are they saying? So we're like, oh, I don't know. We're peeking out the blinds. We got these lights. You know, if you've ever seen, like, the SWAT team lights, you don't see nothing except for lights. That's it. Like, God has arrived. So we're looking out the blinds, and I'm like, I think that's our address. No, that's not our address. So Steve's like, I ain't going out there to look. And I'm like, you need to go out there and look. I don't know. I'm throwing him to the wolves, you know. You're the man of the house. Luckily, we're not on live feed right now. So I go, you know what, let's call 911, let's find out, because it sounded like they were saying our address. So, you know, as only the wise woman can do, I get on the phone, and I'm like, hi, are you outside of our house? She said, is there a Steve Ryan there? And I go, yeah. She goes, he needs to come out with his hands up. And I said, why? Oh, I can't tell you. Tell him to come out. I'm like, dude, you got to go out. I mean, it's like 1 a.m. Like, I've had a long day, but I don't look like this even at 1 a.m. So I'm like, I ain't going out there. And he's like, I ain't going out there. Next thing I know, he's in the bathroom. And I'm like, dude, I got 911. You got to go out. They're calling your name. And by now I'm like, oh, yeah, they're saying, Steve Ryan, come out with your hands up. I can hear him. Like, everybody can hear him. So the lady's like, don't hang up the phone. I'm like, I ain't hanging up the phone. I ain't even going out there. So he finally comes out, moseying in, you know, gets his glasses on, puts his shoes on. He goes out, and they're like, stick your hands in the air. So he's like this. And next thing you know, he's walking backwards down the driveway. They're like, keep your hands in the air. So I'm on the phone. And, of course, as the prophetic, intercessory, wise woman, I am in my bedroom putting my hair up. And I'm like, I've got the phone in my ear. And I'm like, yeah, I'm still here. No, he's gone out. Okay, ma'am, you got to get ready to go out. And I'm like, okay, no, I'm getting ready. Like, I'm sticking my hair up. I'm putting socks on. I'm changing my jammies. Yeah, I'm getting ready to go out. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute. I have 2 kids. Do I look funny now? They're telling me to fix my... It doesn't do much more. I mean, really. Okay. Shake it off. Okay, so... Leave it to a hairdresser. So I'm like, lady, I got 2 kids. And she's like, it doesn't matter. Your husband's out. And I don't even know what's happening with him. I'm like, long gone. He's out there. I don't know. He's on his own. So I'm like, I'm fixing my, well, then it's dawning on me. I got 2 kids. Like, I don't know what's happening. So I real quick get my other phone. We had a home phone at the time. I get my cell phone. I call my dad. I don't know why he didn't pick up at 1 a.m. So I leave a message. Dad, the SWAT team is here. I don't know why. This is not a joke. I'm always teasing with my dad, so I'm like, he's going to answer the phone and think, I'm like, I'm not joking. They're really here. I'm leaving messages. I'm texting him. Dude, I don't know what's happening. Can you come get my kids? I don't know what's going on. So then she's like, okay, it's your turn. Like, I'm on a roller coaster or something. Hey, it's your turn. I'm like, all right, click. So I'm here I am backing up down the driveway. At least my hair's, you know, okay. I got socks on. So I get to the car, and of course, if you know my husband, he can make a wall talk. So he's talking, he's handcuffed, of course. He's talking to the officers, and he's like, so how's your evening going? I'm like, dude, they got an AK-47 at your head. Maybe now's not the time for a conversation. So they're like guns drawn, dogs barking in the car. We live in a cul-de-sac, and our whole cul-de-sac is lit up, and you can see like houses around us, like their lights are flickering on. You know, they're looking out the windows. So come to find out, a neighbor kid, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's called swatting, had a totally different meaning when I was a kid, I'll tell you. But I come out, and one of the officers says, so was your wife holding, or your husband holding you hostage in the garage with your two young girls? And I was like, no. I don't think so. I didn't say that part. I was like, no. And so the story apparently was that there was a Pastor Steve, which at the time we were not pastors, and we were adamant. No, we ain't pastors. It's like, no, there was a Pastor Steve with a black car in a blue house, the only blue house in like a 30-mile radius, of course. And he's holding his wife and two kids hostage for $10,000 because he's high on meth. That was the story. And so Steve's like, no, that's not me. I was like, well, $10,000, I don't know. Could really come in handy. So before I had gone out, I shut the doors to the girls. I put our dog in the back. You know, I got to do the womanly thing, you know, after I fix myself up. And so the guy says, okay, I think we have this figured out. So they said, well, we need to walk through your house just to, I guess, make sure. I don't know. So, you know, they got one cop who Steve's trying to chatter with, and the other cop's like, you know, around every corner, you know, looking through our house. And Steve's like, well, I can open the doors to the girl. He's like, no, I don't want to wake him. Steve's like, here they are. They don't even wake up. So we get into the bedroom, our bedroom, and the guy says, well, obviously, you know, the story wasn't real. And Steve's like, but we really need $10,000. And even the officer was like, yeah, well, okay. So what ended up happening is our neighbor kid, who was 14 at the time, was playing a game online in chat and was dared to SWAT somebody. And so he apparently called a SWAT team on two Walmarts in Texas. I ain't no Walmart in Texas. Calls Walmart in Texas, and then his buddies say, hey, listen, why don't you SWAT somebody in your neighborhood? So he looks out. He knows that we go to church because we're pretty adamant about, you know, we're open about who we are and what we believe. And so he says, oh, there's a guy across the street. His name is Pastor Steve. I don't know his last name. He has two little girls. He pretty much explains what he knows. And it fits. And of course, he goes to our neighbor, or they go to our neighbors, the cops, and they're like, do you know a Pastor Steve? And they're like, yeah, the blue house. So everybody confirms this crazy story. So we go to bed after they all go home and turn their lights off. And I'm watching on Facebook. People are like, oh, what's happening on Ron Circle and Hemet? People are like, oh, somebody was high on meth, and now they're killing their daughters. And I'm like, no, we weren't even in our garage. We just didn't hear what was happening. It's crazy. So it was one of those, what the heck is happening? Like, you don't see something. Well, the next day, a police officer comes to our house to kind of, this is the rundown of what happened. And he says, you know, by the way, if you're a pastor, this family really needs ministry. Okay, well, Steve and I used to be pastors, or youth pastors, a long time ago. And so, like 2 or 3 years ago, and I was like 18. So, all right, 25. So he left, and we both talked about it. So we told our girls, hey, listen, you guys stay in the house. We're going to go across the street. We're going to talk to him and his family. So they come to the door, the parents, and we said, hey, can we talk to what his name was? And they said, yeah. And so he comes out. Well, he's crying. I think he thought we were going to press charges, which, you know, a month later, the guy in, what is it, Florida, somebody did it to him, and he ends up dying. So a month later, we're like, oh, man, that could have been really bad. You know, here we are making a joke of it. So we talked to him, and we said, listen, we aren't going to hold any grudges. We know you were goofing off, but it could have been really bad. You know, our kids could have woken up. I have no idea why they didn't wake up except that it was God. there were lights everywhere and sirens at some point and dudes with guns in the rooms. And by the morning time, they were like, what happened? Like, you won't believe it. We should have gotten a selfie with the cops. And so the next day was a Wednesday. And so we talked to this young man and his parents, and then we left. And so Steve leaves and goes to the grocery store. And later on that day, I get a knock at the door. And here's this young kid, really, sobbing. I need to talk to you. I go, well, my kids are home. I could talk to you outside. So I start talking to him, and he says, I just, my whole life is messed up. They say I'm going to go to jail. They're going to send me to juvie. Apparently, we were not the only ones, and he had done it to some schools here in town, so you're welcome. So we talked to him, and so Steve went over later, prayed with him, invited him to church. He came to church with us that night. And so he comes very out of his element, did not want to be here, but I think he came probably so we wouldn't press charges. But nonetheless, he heard about the Word of God, and some of you met him and didn't even know. It was a couple years ago, and he went home, and I think the story was kind of different. And so we would talk, and we'd wave hi every now and then. My kids would be like, Mom, that's the dude. I'm like, shh, just smile and wave. But, you know, after a couple years, when we're away from the story, after a couple years, by the time he ended up moving a couple months ago to another state with his family, he had a really rough home life. He had charges that were pressed against him, and we were the least of them. Steve and I offered to go and testify on his behalf and help him out. And, you know, we had people that are like, what are you doing? We're like, well, you know, he needs Jesus. I don't know what to tell you. And so much so that by the time he moved, his sister came across the street and said, hey, I know you guys are pastors, which is kind of funny. Yeah, in the blue house with the black car. Would you marry my fiance and I? And so Steve, a couple months ago, went and officiated his sister's wedding, got to know his family. I mean, it was a whole dynamic. It was completely different. And the boy would come over every couple months sobbing, just a bad home, like, my mom kicked me out again. He'd sit in our living room, and I'd tell the girls, go in the back room. We'd talk and pray with him, send him on his way. But, you know, it's one of those uno. That's a but God situation. That's a wait. There's another side to the story. It could have gone really bad. It didn't go bad. But, you know, God had a different purpose. God had something on the other side that we couldn't see. And that's how God is. You know, we called our conference Uninhibited, and I had a couple people that were like, you know what that means, right? By the way, don't Google the word uninhibited. Some of you looked at me funny, just trust me. All right, so inhibited means to be held back or restrained. It means to be let free. Uninhibited means to be let free, unrestrained, and no restrictions. How cool of a word is that? We should be uninhibited in our faith with God. We should be uninhibited in our hope and our trust and our joy and our peace and all these things that God offers to us. We should be uninhibited and free to be who God has called us to be in every single situation. And I don't know about you, but I have situations, like I said before, that I'll go to God and be like, you really even there? Am I the only one? Yeah. Sorry. Me and Robin are like, are you really there? Thank you. The intercessor. All right. Yeah. Two of my favorite people in the Bible, Moses and David. I always teach on Moses and David. I love Moses and David. David because he's, you know, artsy and he's poetic. And then on the flip side, he's like, a man of war. I'm going to kill them all. You know, Psalms, he's like happy. And then he's like, kill everybody. Slaughter all my enemies. Like, I love the dude. He's like totally bipolar. And then he's like playing a harp. I mean, really, you ever thought about it? He's like a spear in the back pocket, and he's like, ling, ling, kill them all! I like David. He's cool. He was a murderer, and yet God was like, he's my favorite person. I'm not even a murderer, so I'm good. I'm in the running. And then Moses, I love Moses, because he's so not there. He stutters. He's sold or given away, you know, as a kid. He was rescued. He was raised in posh circumstances in a palace that he didn't belong in. He wasn't the guy. He never was. He didn't fit. He didn't fit with the Hebrews, even though they were his people, but he didn't fit with the Egyptians because they weren't his people, but they kind of were his people. And he's just kind of like, he kind of goes with the flow. He's like a redneck. He's just kind of like, okay, I'm going to stutter my way through this. And then you find with Moses, you find one day that after he leaves the palace, or he's in the palace, that he murders somebody. Even he murders somebody. And he's sent away from both lifestyles, both the poverty lifestyle, the slavery of a Hebrew, as well as the lifestyle of being a prince in Egypt. He's sent away from both. He's cast out. And the next time we hear about him, he's talking to a bush that's on fire. Right? Like it took a bush on fire to get his attention. I don't know. It's kind of weird. You wonder how many times God tried before that, right? He's tending sheep. He's married. He has kids. He's tending sheep. And this bush is like, poof, there it is. And it starts talking. And he answers. I mean, really, this is my kind of guy. He answers. But then it says he's called, you know, we know the story. He's called back into Egypt. You know, free my people. I want to free my people. You're part of those people. Go back to what you once knew, but go back to what you didn't know. Go back to the Hebrews. Go back to the life. I'm gonna save all of my people, and you're gonna be the one to lead them out. But I can't. Okay, I'll give you somebody else. But I don't want to. Okay, go anyway. And you know, by the time they leave Egypt, it doesn't say that Aaron was his spokesperson anymore. You ever been in a situation where you feel totally not ready to be there, but by the time you're done, you're like totally prepared? Like you got the cup and t-shirt. You can tell people how to run it. You can tell people what to do, where to go, when they need to be there, even though you weren't the one in the beginning. And so we pick up the story with Moses, where he's called to go back and he's going through all these plagues. Can you imagine walking before the king, before Pharaoh, and going, well, today you're going to get frogs. Frogs. You know, all of those plagues were a different god. That's a totally different sermon. All of those plagues were a different god that they worshipped. And Moses beat them all. There was a but god. There was a Uno card that got played. So we get to the part of the story where Moses is being, the plagues are over. They're on the very last one. The angel of death is going through, and Moses says, I need you to tell all the people to gather all of their stuff and be ready. Get ready, gather everything you have, your children. The Passover is going to happen. You're going to be saved. But you need to be ready when I tell you, with everything that you have, and gather all the gold and silver, all the stuff that you want, everything you've ever wanted, go ahead and take it and be ready. Now imagine being an Egyptian, and your Hebrew neighbor comes and says, hey, so we've been here for 400 years, but we're going to be leaving soon, and I need all your gold and your silver, and maybe some of your pottery and your livestock. I'd like some of that. Maybe one of those over there, and how about that right there? I'd like that. I mean, you got to think, these people were in bondage. These people, this is their life. This is what they had been used to. But I have this quote, when you never know freedom, your best day in bondage can become what you think is your testimony, never realizing that God isn't done setting you free. Read it again. When you never know freedom, your best day in bondage can become what you think is your testimony, never realizing that God isn't even done setting you free. Some of us stop and go, oh, we made it through the plagues. And God's like, no. That's not the end. What do you mean it's not the end? No. You're going to leave. Well, yeah, I know. You say we all get free. No. You're really going to leave. I'm really going to free you from this. I'm really going to take this addiction. I'm really going to heal your marriage. I'm really going to bring back your kids. No, I know. God, you're going to do it. No, I am really ready to do this. I need you to get prepared. I need you to gather your things. I need you to get ready. And when I say go, I need you to be ready. I have the but God ready for you. No, I know. Yeah, that's cool. It's all in the Bible. No, I'm telling you, now is the time. I'm telling you to get ready. What you've been asking for is right there. And so it says they packed everything up And it says the moment comes that they're free to go. Pharaoh says, just leave. Take everything you have. Take it all. Whatever you want, just go away. So they do. A big but, God. And your scholars say that approximately 17 days from when they left, God leads them to the edge of the sea. Can you imagine? You leave freedom. 400 years, you finally leave. And now 2.5 million people, along with livestock, along with carts and baskets, all your belongings. I mean, this isn't just like a mile long. This is like miles and miles and miles of walking. 2.5 million people. And they get to the edge of the sea, right where God put them. Can you imagine being free? And then you get to the edge. God, what happened? It's only 17 days in. So they camp, and it says that people believe that they were there about 6 or 7 days. And then they started hearing the armies. They started hearing the Egyptians come. But they're in their freedom. But they're hearing their bondage come back. God, what's happening? So they start murmuring. Moses, why did you bring us out of Egypt just to die? We would have been better off where we were. And it gets louder. Can you imagine 2.5 million people? Like, what was that moment that they heard the hooves and the chariots and the yelling and the marching of men in battle? It wouldn't have been quiet. They weren't sneaking up on him. And so their murmuring gets louder. Moses, you should have just kept us where we were. We were fine where we were. And so it says that Moses goes to God. God, what do you want me to do? And before he goes to God, he goes to the people and says, just stand still. Stand still. Just stand still. You ever been in a moment where the best thing you can do is to stand still, but the last thing you want to do is to stand still? You want to fix everything. You want to put everything back in order. You want to get all the things that are crossed. You want to fix them. You want to set everybody straight. No, this is not who I am. No, that's not what it is. They perceive you one way, and you're like, no, no, let me tell you. And God goes, no, 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 let me tell them. Just stand still and wait and see the salvation of the Lord. It says in Exodus 14:15, then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. Think about it. Moses has seen all these other things happen, all these wild card moments, all these but God situations. And now he stands at the sea going, God, what do you want me to do? And God's like, just stretch out your hand and wave it, and then it'll part. Like, we go, oh, yeah, why didn't he just do that? It had never happened. It was a wild card. You know, I play this game on my phone with my girls. It's a trivia game, and like an IQ thing. I'm totally losing, by the way. And so it'll have questions on it. Like, you got to figure out the question, and one of them, it'll have like a button in the middle, and it'll say, press both buttons 10 times. I don't know how many times I did this. I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm like, there's only one button. So then I'm like, okay, press that button, and I'll press the word button. So I press both, 5, 6 times in. So finally, just by accident, I'm like doing this, like stupid game, and I realize the button is moving. And I'm like, whoa. So I move the button, and underneath the big button is a little button. And I'm like, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But I never thought of it. But you know, that's how God is. His ways are so much higher than our ways. His thoughts are so much higher than our thoughts. You know, God is changing the laws of gravity. God is changing the laws of creation because God is the creator. You know, we get in moments where we go, well, no, I don't know how this is going to happen. It can't go like that. And God goes, no, it can go any way I want it to go. I'm not in any category. I'm not in any box. You can't compare me with anybody. You can't say I'm going to be like this or I'm going to do it like that because you're creation. You can't even think of the things that God can do. You can't even imagine what God can do because your imagination doesn't go there. You were created. Yep. So the creator goes, oh, I got one better. And he goes, just part the sea. Like Moses was like, well, yeah, okay, duh, part the sea. And it says they walked across on dry ground. Isn't that a great story? I mean, like, you think anybody ran by with their fingers? You're like, woo-hoo-hoo. I don't know. I'd be that one, you know? I'd be the one like, watch me. Whoop. Whoop. Sorry. Okay. I'm going to move on. Isaiah 43 says, thus saith the Lord, which maketh the way in the sea and a path in the mighty waters, which bringeth forth the chariot and horse, the army and the power. They shall lie down together. They shall not rise. They are extinct. They are quenched as tow. Remember ye not the former things, neither consider the things of old. Behold, I will do a new thing. Now it shall spring forth. Shall ye not know it? I will even make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. God always makes a way. God always makes a way. Every single time, God makes a way. We get in circumstances that we think there is no way out. There's no way this can change. There's no way this person will do that, or this thing will happen here, or this finance thing is going to be resolved. Nothing is going to happen. And God goes, oh no, I always make a way. I put streams in the desert, and water doesn't even belong in the desert. I open doors that nobody else can shut, and I shut doors that nobody can open. I change the atmosphere. I make down go up, and I make up go down. I make Jesus walk on water. I split the sea when I want it to split. I heal blind people. I heal Pastor Susan of cancer. I change your finances. I bring back your children. I do the things that you can't even imagine. You don't even foresee, because your mind can't even conceive what God has. Exodus 14, 19, the angel of God that had been leading the camp of Israel now shifted and got behind them. And the pillar of cloud that had been in front also shifted to the rear. The cloud was now between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. The cloud enshrouded one camp in darkness, flooded the other with light. The two camps didn't come near each other all night. So imagine this. They were walking for 17 days. They had a cloud covered them. They had light at night. They camp for 6 or 7 days. The angel of God is with them. This cloud is with them. And then they start walking through the waters. Some people in and out of the water. That's my version, Message Bible. They start walking on dry ground. And it says that the angel moves from in front of them to behind them. And the cloud that was covering them now moves behind them to give them light. But at the same time, the angel moves behind them. He's no longer guiding them, because who needs to be guided through water, right? He's no longer guiding them because they know where to go. He's now defending them. The army is now holding back the armies of Egypt. And it says that the cloud gave light ahead and gave darkness behind. So the enemy didn't even know what was happening. They couldn't perceive it. They couldn't hear it. They couldn't understand it. They didn't even know what was happening. And it says that the Hebrews, the 2.5 million people with all of their stuff and all of their things and their belongings and their livestock, where they were once guided by a light and an angel, they were now protected by the same thing. And you know, when I read the story, I read it over and over, and I was like, God, how many times have I been in a situation where I'm like, where did you go? Not to realize that he's behind me going, I got your back this whole time. I've got the light ahead of you. I've taught you. I've told you where to go. You know what to do. Just follow my word. You know, if you don't read the word, you can't follow the word. Just throwing that in there. Follow my word, and I'm going to defend you. All the things that are said about you, all the things that are done for you, to you, against you, all of those things, I'm going to defend you. And when the enemy comes against you and brings sickness, I'm going to defend you. I'm going to put light where there was previously darkness. And you're going to make it all the way through. And it says in the story that they get across. And what happens if you read it? It says that the chariot wheels started to fall off. You know, I told Sierra, I saw her in a little while ago. I told her, we were talking about the story. And I said, don't you think that was just like an extra? Like God was like, think. Knock the horse over. donk, into the water. I mean, like, why even pull the wheels off? Like, they were just confused. It says they were confused, but that chariot wheels were falling off. Things were breaking. And so it brought even more confusion. It was calamity. You know, he had 2.5 million people in peace. I don't even know how that happens. We can't even get 200 people in peace. 2.5 million people walking together in peace, in harmony, walking through. But it says behind them, everything was a disaster. And the whole story changed. But God, uno, everything changed. You know, David says this in Psalms, I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. My God, my strength, in whom I will trust. My shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. You know, the horn of my salvation, horn means, it's actually figuratively where animals that have horns, they use it to protect themselves. They use it to win a battle. That's what a horn is for. And it's also, the definition also means it's a high point of something. And then if you go to Luke, it says, blessed is the Lord God of Israel, for he has visited and redeemed his people, and he has raised up a horn of salvation for us in the house of his servant David. So it says that Jesus is the horn of our salvation. He is the high point of our salvation. Everything good that is our salvation, everything good that is Jesus, is raised above our circumstances. And not only that, but the horn of our salvation fights for us. How cool is that? You could be totally alone in person, but a whole mass army of angels of God fighting for you as the horn of your salvation. Everything that salvation brings to us in our relationship with Christ comes to the horn of salvation. And we raise that up as a standard in our situations. You know, my husband has been homesick, and luckily this isn't live feed again, but if you have a husband, they're like 5 kids when they're sick. Poor guy. He's had the flu since Thursday. You know, me and the girls, we've been like quarantining him. Stay there. We'll go here. I've been taking the girls out the last couple days. Like, we're going to go somewhere far, far away. But you know what's cool is last night we were sitting in the living room and he was quarantined in the bedroom, sick, and we're sitting on the couch. I am with the 2 girls, and we're watching a movie or documentary, or I don't know, documentary sounds like really educational. We're watching something, and my youngest goes, Mom, do we have to go to bed yet? I'm like, well, you know, it's almost 9. Yeah, you got to go to bed. We got church. She goes, well, can we do communion for Dad? And I go, yeah, we should do communion. Like, I was kind of like, I thought that, but then out loud I was like, communion for Dad? She's like, well, yeah, he's sick. Can't we just do communion? And I was like, yeah, child of faith. Get some water out of the fridge. And I don't know, a hamburger bun. And so we sat at the counter. You know, God changes it. I don't know how, but he does. So we had some bread. We each had a little thing of water. Cheyenne got a little measuring cup, called it a shot glass. I don't even want to know where she heard that from, but she's like, I got my shot glass of water, Mom. I'm like, no, it's a measuring cup, okay? So we, I got to move on. So we, I'm like, okay, well, who's going to say the verse? And so Sierra, my oldest, we don't even have our Bible out. She starts quoting the communion verse for bread. And I was like, okay, wow, let's take and eat. So then I'm like, okay, well, who knows the next verse? And Cheyenne's like, I know the next verse. So she starts saying the next verse. I'm like, great, let's pray. But you know what? It's the childlike faith. They didn't even question it. They didn't even think twice about it. I'm giggling. And I was a little convicted after I put him to bed. But you know, that's where we should be. God, the horn of our salvation. I'm going to rise above my situation. I'm going to rise above my relationships, my finances, my health. And I'm going to call on the name of the Lord, who gives a great big but God. and a Uno card, and he goes, no, 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 it's not going that way. And he lays it down, and everything changes. How many have a circumstance that they need something to change? How many have a circumstance that they need everything to change? You got it, Bethany. But you know what? That's the God we serve. That's him, the creator. You know, I'm always telling my girls, can you believe, like, the dude who made the moon wants to talk to us? The one who put all the stars in their exact place, not one out of line. They move the water in the right direction every single time when it goes down the drain. They made the mountains. He did it all. Everything. And we question if God's going to come through. This God who made the sun, the moon, the stars, who made creation, and we go, God, I don't know. I don't know. Is it really going to change? God, can this happen? And God goes, but I made it all, and you still question? God, I'm going to stand on the horn of salvation. I'm going to raise up the standard of who you are, what my word says is going to match with my faith. And you know, everything the Bible says, I had a kid at school last week. I don't even remember what, I think it was second grade or first grade. And Tracy, it wasn't your kid, so don't worry. And we were talking, I think it was first grade. We were talking about the Bible. Still not your kid. You got a first grade, I just realized. We were talking about the Bible, and one of the kids said, we were talking about Jonah. And the little boy said, but that wasn't like a real story. Like that was, I go, no, that was a real story. And they were like, what? And I go, yeah, this big giant fish. And they were like, what? And I'm like, it's a real story. And then I walked out thanking God that I am not a teacher and only a part-time sub. And I was like, how many times do I do that with God? Really, God? Is this word really? Does it fit? And then I come to church and I'm like, yay, it works. And then I walk out on Stetson and Gerard and I'm like, really, God? Are you going to change my finances? Are you going to heal? Are you going to set free? Are you going to deliver? Really? But God, in every single situation, in every single circumstance, no matter how small or how big, God doesn't see it any different. How cool is that? We serve that kind of God. We serve the God who has a solution for every single thing that you're going through. That's just who he is. Isn't that cool? So I want to encourage you, if you are somebody that the devil has tried to stop you over and over and over and over, I want to tell you, that's not the end of your testimony. This isn't where your story stops. I believe all of our days are numbered. That's what the Bible says. All of our days are numbered. If you're here, you're here for a reason. When you go home, you're home for a reason. God has a purpose. God has a plan. God has a way. It's going to happen in all of his time. We just have to rise above and go, God, I don't know when it's going to happen, but I've got all my stuff gathered. I'm ready. I'm prepared. And when you call me, I'm going to go with everything I have. It's all going to trail behind me. But I'm ready. How many are ready? Would you stand? If you're one of those, you need a very big, I like big butts kind of God moment. Would you just raise your hand? If you're standing next to one of those people, put your hands on them. We're going to pray. Lord, we come before you. I thank you for every woman that's here tonight and even the few men that snuck in. Lord, I thank you that you are going to rise above all of it. You are going to do what needs to be done. We stand on your word that says you are our healer. We stand on your word that says that you are our provider. You are our deliverer. You are our hope and you are our strength. You are the peace in our life. Father, you died on the cross for us, for me. You did it all for me. You did it for each one of these women here tonight. And every single small thing, every single big thing, ginormous thing, every single thing, you already have it laid out and planned. Lord, I pray protection over each woman. I thank you. We are going to be people in our church, in our valley. We are going to be those women, those ones, those people. Did you see her? Did you hear what she said? God, make us those women, those chosen chicks, those women, those chosen ones that stand up and say, I'm ready whenever you tell me. I'm ready to pull the card. I'm ready to say, I have a big, but wasn't planned to come out like that. But Lord, I thank you for this night. Lord, I thank you. You give us provision. Give us a week with open doors, Lord. In Jesus' name, everybody said,
amen.
Hey, listen, we want to give a big